Charity and Sylvia were two ordinary Vermont women who lived in the first half of the 19th century, but they lived in a truly extraordinary marriage. So they were both born in Massachusetts during the Revolutionary era, and they lived together at Weybridge outside of Middlebury, Vermont, from 1807 until 1851 when Charity died. And they ran a tailor shop and took part in all of the activities of their town.
What brought them to Vermont in the first place?
Sylvia moved up there as an adolescent. Her family was one of many that went bankrupt during the Revolution. It was a time of a lot of economic distress, and her father lost his land. So her family moved up to Vermont since it was the part of Vermont where they moved was a frontier area. So it was open to new settlers. And she moved up in her teens with many of her siblings and her mother. Charity came up significantly later. She was, in fact, in her late 20s by that time. And she had been working as a teacher and a seamstress in Massachusetts, where she'd grown up. But she had a lot of difficulty finding a place for herself. She had a lot of relationships with young women that generated a lot of gossip and animosity in the various towns where she lived. And finally, in 1807, she went up to Weybridge, Vermont, to visit a friend who'd offered an invitation and to escape a lot of the persecution that she had experienced in Massachusetts. And it was just a happenstance that she met Sylvia on that trip, and she decided never to leave Weybridge.
Well, tell us how the two did meet in the first place.
Well, soon after Charity arrived in Weybridge, she began working as a tailor. A lot of the time when we think about sewing during the colonial period or in early America, we tend to imagine that all women had the capability to sew clothes. But in fact, sewing outer garments, especially anything more complicated than a shirt, was quite a difficult enterprise and something that required training and specialized skills, which Charity had. And so when she arrived in this frontier community, her work was really in demand. And she found in Sylvia a helpful apprentice to do the stitching. Charity was an expert in cutting the fabric in the correct way. And I think that over the first couple of months that that Charity spent in Weybridge, the two women fell in love as they spent time sewing together and passing away those cold Vermont winter days.
We're talking about the early 1800s. What was the general attitude of people towards same-sex couples at the time?
Well, that's a really good question, because there was a lot of ambiguity. This was a time in which intimate relations between people of the same sex were very strongly encouraged. And most of the time, those intimate relations happened within the context of something that historians call romantic friendship. So very close relationships between young women and between young men were seen as positive aspects of society. So young women, through their friendships, young women could develop their religious sensibilities or their literary sensibilities. They could meet spouses. Young men, likewise, found companionship in their close friendships with each other. And as historians, we understand that some of these intimacies, many of which were marked with language of love and affection, some of these intimacies were platonic, and some of these intimacies were probably erotic, although we have very little written evidence. We have some, but very little written evidence about the sexual components of people's relationships. However, society tended to look askance at these close intimacies between women or between men when they seemed to interfere with young people getting married. And that seemed to be the problem for Charity and the friendships she had formed with women prior to Sylvia. Charity had promised, she had pledged to her family and to herself by the age of 23 that she was never going to get married. And I think it probably worried the parents of her friends and people in the towns where she spent time that the intensity of her relations with other young women were preventing them from getting married as well. Of course, same-sex sexuality itself was taboo at the time. People mostly turned a blind eye to what people might do in private, as long as it didn't interfere with the ordinary, conventional pace of life.
And as you mentioned, Charity really did feel the sting of rejection in towns around Massachusetts because of her close relationships with other women. But things seemed different in Weybridge. Were they, and why?
There were a number of reasons why Weybridge ended up proving hospitable to this unusual marriage, which did cause concern even for people in the town of Weybridge. So there was a lot of rejection of Sylvia and Charity from within Sylvia's family who lived nearby. However, there were also elements which led to the women's acceptance. First of all, because it was this frontier community and it was very undeveloped, Charity brought skills that the community badly needed. And she was also able to offer employment first to Sylvia, who later, of course, became a co-owner of the business as their relationship developed into a marriage. The women were also able to offer employment to other women in the area, both young women and married women. They brought in cash. They also participated in the economy of the town. So they were valuable in that light. They were valuable as aunts to Sylvia's many, many nephews and nieces. She had over 100 nephews and nieces, which is quite extraordinary. And obviously resources for all those nephews and nieces were scarce. So the women contributed money to the education of some of their nephews and nieces, Charity's as well as Sylvia's. They trained some of their nieces in sewing. They housed them. They fed them. They cared for them. They, in particular, cared for their religious well-being. Charity and Sylvia became absolutely the stalwarts of the local Congregationalist church. Again, because it was a frontier community, ministers often moved in and out of the ministry in Weybridge rather rapidly. Charity and Sylvia, in particular, took part in leading Sunday school classes, cleaning the church, maintaining it, maintaining friendships with the ministers for decades. So they provided a stability for the religious congregation, which in other ways was absent. So, and then I think that Weybridge ended up being a sort of Goldilocks place for Charity and Sylvia because it was just far enough out of the reach of Charity's family. She could live her life kind of outside of their control. While the people of Weybridge were willing to accept Charity in part because she brought a certain class to the town. Not only did she bring her ability to sew, but she was a very well-respected poet and writer who came from this literary family. And so she brought that kind of that touch of class to Weybridge at a time when it was a very rough and rural community.
I'm speaking with Rachel Hope Cleaves. She's the author of Charity and Sylvia, A Same-Sex Marriage in Early America. Rachel, it does appear to me that even those who had initial reservations about the relationship between these two women were won over by the love that they observed that the two had for each other. Is that an accurate assumption?
I think that's absolutely true. And so even the members of Sylvia's family, including her mother and several of her brothers who rejected the women's household at the beginning, over time came to accept them. And in fact, Sylvia's mother, who was widowed and lived to a very old age, spent many years living in the women's house towards the end of her life. And most significantly, for all of those nephews and nieces I spoke about who were born after Charity and Sylvia created their home together, that generation and the generation that followed grew up never knowing anything different from the two women living together as a married couple. And so for those younger generations, they came to understand as they grew up that their aunt's marriage was atypical, but on the other hand, they grew up accepting it and loving their aunts, who were generous and devoted and remarkable individuals. Charity in particular seemed to generate a response from so many people who met her that she was just this extraordinary person, extraordinarily bright and extraordinarily engaged and adventurous. And over the course of their lives, the women really came to be venerated by the people who knew them. You could see that in the treatment of their memories after their death, and in particular, the fact that after Sylvia passed away, her family buried her in the same grave as Charity and commissioned a really beautiful gravestone, which is still in the Weybridge Cemetery today.
You say that they were married, yet they were never formally wed. What proof is there that this was indeed a marriage between Charity and Sylvia?
That's a really interesting question. And I absolutely argue throughout the book that it was a marriage. And in fact, I open the book with expressly this point because I know it raises eyebrows in listeners or in readers. I found several quotations from people at the time describing Charity and Sylvia's relationship as a marriage, explicitly with that language. So, for example, a young man who grew up in a nearby town and wrote a memoir explaining how he had always heard it mentioned as if Miss Bryant and Miss Drake were married to each other. Or the woman's sister-in-law, Sally Snell Bryant, actually the mother of the famous 19th century poet William Cullen Bryant, who wrote to Charity and Sylvia that, "I consider you both one, as man and wife are one." Or William Cullen Bryant himself, who wrote a beautiful description of the women's marriage in a letter he published in his newspaper, the New York Evening Post, and later published in a collection of letters from his travels. So there is evidence that people at the time referred to the women as being married or being like a married couple. But the laws of marriage in the early 19th century looked somewhat different to how they look today. And for one thing, in early 19th century America, common law marriage was a very common practice. So you could be married legally in the early 19th century simply by cohabitating and being known in your community as married. Did Charity and Sylvia fit that definition? That, I think, is a really tricky question that we can't have an absolute answer to.
Rachel Hope Cleaves is the author of Charity and Sylvia, A Same-Sex Marriage in Early America. Rachel, thank you so much for sharing the story of these two women.
Thank you so much for having me on.